Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? Not too loud, too quiet. So thanks very much for those that put this conference together. It's been very enjoyable, very interesting. I'm going to give a talk that's a little bit different to all of the talks that we've heard thus far. While there's going to be a small amount of formalism on the screen behind me, most of this talk is going to be me standing up here, waving my hands, trying to motivate a picture of reality that we're going to take to arise from particular physical theory. In particular, I'm going to be motivating a picture of time. Now, the theories that I am discussing are due to Julian Barber. So in a pair of companion papers in 1994, and also in a popular science book in 1999, Barber set forth his theory that there is no time. And he derived this from both his Markian formulation of general relativity and also his interpretation of canonical quantum gravity. So the claim then is Barber's claim that we live in a timeless reality. One of the aims of what I want to bring out here is that there are actually two separate claims that Barber's making. And he's not entirely clear about the fact that he makes two separate claims. And those two separate claims are, first of all, that his Markian formulation of general relativity is timeless, and also that, as a second claim, his interpretation of canonical quantum gravity is timeless. I'm going to focus mostly on his Markian formulation of general relativity, though I will need to mention a little bit his interpretation of canonical quantum gravity. So the goal here is to show that there are two different senses of timelessness here, and then as a secondary goal, I want to say that the Markian formulation of general relativity is not really timeless. It's a rather suspect claim that Barber makes. Okay, so to start, in fact, I should give first of all, an overview. We're going to start by giving Barber's theory, so I'll go through time and Jacobian mechanics. So this is where Barber eliminates time from his Markian formulation of general relativity. And then Markian dynamics is how Barber eliminates frame from his Markian formulation of general relativity. Then I'll say a few words about canonical quantum gravity. And then I'll tease out these two senses of timelessness. The essential question here is, what is it that's missing from a theory for time to be missing from the theory? And of course this leads to the question, what is it that time is in a theory? And so the way that I'm going to cash this out is in terms of Carlo Rovelli's analysis of the attributes of time. So I'll get to those towards the end. Okay, so to get out of the way, if we imagine that in Hamiltonian mechanics, we have a certain geometry to our phase space, to our state space, and that geometry is symplectic geometry. So here, the phase space is just the cotangent bundle of the configuration space. We've got a symplectic 2 form, that's the external derivative of the canonical 1 form, and the canonical 1 form is simply encodes Hamilton's equation. So what we have here in this geometry is all of the equations of motion embodied in the geometry of our state space. Now, likewise, when we move to the Lagrangian schema, we also have a particular geometry. We find we've got a Riemannian geometry. The inertial structure, so here is the kinetic energy in generalized coordinates. The inertial structure is one side of a double-sided coin that is the geometry. So we can define a line element in terms of the kinetic energy, just like this, and we see that this is just simply a Riemannian geometry on our state space. All right, so with that in mind, put that to one side. Now we're going to talk about elimination, there is an elimination procedure that can be used in Lagrangian mechanics to eliminate time from our formalism. So this is how we do it. We need, first of all, a Lagrangian that's not explicitly a function of time, and also the conservation of energy conditions. So if we have a system that obeys these particular conditions, we see that we can consider time to be a dependent variable in our theory. We can come up with an independent parameter tau to describe our dynamics in this particular theory, and we can do a change of variables in our action integral to make it an integral in terms of tau, and here the prime is differentiation with respect to tau. So we have these these T primes in our expression, and it's an integral between two endpoints that are a function of tau. Now, when we do this, we can also then write our kinetic energy as a function of tau. We can rearrange this to get a function of T prime, where we simply use the fact that T equals E minus V. And then, if we sub all of these back into our original action integral, we end up with a new action integral, a reduced action integral, that looks like this. So what you can see is that this is no longer a function of time. Ds here is not a parameter of integration. Ds here is our line element. As you remember, the line element is a function of the generalized coordinates. So what we've got here, if we want to do this integration, we pick one of our independent coordinates q as tau, and then we do this integration completely independently of t, our time. Okay, so there's the formalism. Well, what does this mean? In Lagrangian dynamics, this is the picture of time that we have. Here's our action, our variational principle, or action principle. What we do is we pick two points in our configuration space at two different times. So a configuration space is multidimensional. We pick these two points. We use the variational principle to determine the path of critical action between these two points. And then this path is what describes our dynamics. It gives us our equations of motion. Well, where does time come into this? Time is a completely external parameter that we bring along to our path. And we chop up our path, and we say, here's how t ticks from one point in a configuration space to another. So there is an inherent Newtonian notion of time that we use in Lagrangian mechanics. In the Jacobian formalism, we no longer have this t that we kind of impose on the system. We have this timeless, in a sense, action integral. So we, again, take two points in our configuration space. We do this action integral once again, or we follow our variational principle to find the path between them. We utilize the Riemannian geometry here. So this is now a function of the line element. We utilize the Riemannian geometry not to find a point of critical action, but to find the geodesic in our configuration space. So the path of the shortest path between our two points now determines our physically realizable trajectories in our configuration space. And the way that we say that this path ticks in time is purely a function of all of our independent coordinates q. There is no time here that we come along and chop up our path through configuration space. So what we see now is that whereas in Lagrangian mechanics we define our evolution in terms of our parameter t, we define our evolution in terms of time, here it's the evolution along our path that defines t. So if you remember the expression back on the last slide, t prime is a function of e, v, and tau. We have all of e and v and tau. We just plug that in and we define time in terms of the evolution through our path. This is a Jacobian formulation of dynamics. Julian Barba refers to this type of time as ephemeris time. It's an operational notion of time that's apparently been used by astronomers over the last 50 to 100 years. Okay, so this is the Jacobian notion of time. Now, if we move on to Marquian dynamics, this is how we eliminate frame from our picture of mechanics. So what we do is we move from a configuration space to a relative configuration space. We take away those degrees of freedom that correspond to center of mass, momentum, and rotation as well. So we eliminate these and we call our new space Q naught, relative configuration space. Now, we want to come up with a Jacobian-style principle here, but we can no longer use the Riemannian geometry of the configuration space because the Riemannian geometry of the configuration space is dependent on the energy, and that energy is a frame-dependent notion. So we need a frame-independent notion to define a metric on our configuration space. And this is where the Marquian element comes in. So by Marquian dynamics, I'm referring to a Jacobian theory of Q naught, and to achieve that, we need a frame-independent definition of ds. Now, this is how this particular element is produced. So if we imagine two configurations in our configuration space. PHY1 and PHY2. We describe PHY1 in terms of some arbitrary coordinate system, which I'm calling here the QI. And then we describe PHY2 in terms of the same coordinate system and a small variance from our configuration Q1. So we've got Q1 and then some small variance from that configuration. Now we can tell the distance between these two particular configurations is given by just a Pythagorean element just here. This is a completely arbitrary distance. This is a meaningless distance because we can arbitrarily chosen a coordinate system. But what we can do is vary our coordinatization of Q1 and Q2 in such a way that we can minimize the difference between these two configurations to find an intrinsic minimal difference between the two. And we do this in the following way. So here, if we define our line element in this way, what we've got is the same sort of thing that's up here, except we've now got an element of O sub alpha here is Euclidean rotations and translations. And what we do is we vary with respect to lambda, and when we do so, there's two ways to think about it. One way to think about it is we're varying our coordinatization of the system in order to minimize the distance between phi1 and phi2. Or another way we can think about it is we've got phi1, which is some three-dimensional configuration, and we take phi2, which is also a three-dimensional configuration, and we move it around until we find the intrinsic difference between the two. And so what this allows us to do is define a line element on the configuration space. And once we have a line element, we can have a Jacobian theory with a geodesic principle. We can extend this from configurations, which is three-dimensional configurations of point particles, into Riemannian three geometries. So when we do so, what we need to do is kind of extend all of our Machian ideas. And the relative configuration space, we now call superspace. The geometry is given by a dynamical supermetric. The details are a little bit more complicated, but the ideas are essentially the same. We get two, three geometries. We get some sort of local locality relation between our points and our three geometries. We shift them around until we find the intrinsic difference. This defines a metric on our space. So we've got a configuration space, and between any two points, we can find the distance between these two points. And this gives us our Jacobian theory. Now, once we can do that, we can form an action integral, construct the Jacobian principle, and then we can string together sequences of three geometries, and when we string together these sequences, we get a four-dimensional space-time. There are further details about foliation invariance. There are actually multiple paths that we can get between two particular points. These are all geodesics, and they give us equivalent solutions to Einstein's field equations, four-dimensional solutions. That's not going to be a major concern for us here. Now, Bartle's claim, when he puts all these together, is that general relativity is just such a Machian formulation, or Machian theory of mechanics. Okay, so why is this timeless? The reason why this is timeless is that it's a theory constructed as a Jacobian geodesic principle on a configuration space. So each element of our configuration space does not include any time. They're all three-dimensional configurations. Therefore, time is missing in that respect. But we can recover time through this Machian principle that joins our three geometries together. Okay, so that's Barber's Machian formulation of general relativity. So if we move on to the canonical quantum gravity, Barber's interpretation here. Now, if we apply Dirac's constraint quantization techniques or procedures to this to Machian geometric dynamics, we end up with the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. And the Wheeler-DeWitt equation is just a constraint equation of this form. Psi here is a complex value function of three geometries. Barber's interpretation of this formalism is that we can put... Barber's interpretation of this formalism is that we interpret psi as a static quantum probability distribution over the configuration space. So in a configuration space, we have all possible configurations of three geometries. Psi is a function of these three geometries and gives us a probability distribution for any particular one. Right, so that's what that says there. So, this probability distribution, just like Bohr's, interpretation of quantum mechanics, just gives us the likelihood of actualizing any one of these configurations. Now, as you can see here, there's no time dependency. It's a static probability distribution across our configurations. At no point does anything change. It's just configuration space and probability distribution. And this is how Barber claims that his interpretation of canonical quantum gravity is timeless. So let's just elaborate on this picture a little bit and how we're supposed to imagine this configuration space and probability distribution. So first of all, we have an external picture. So the external picture is we can take infinitesimal hypercubes across our whole configuration space, calculate psi star in these hypercubes, take a representative configuration from our hypercube, a number of those proportional to psi star, move them out of this space and put them in a new space called, that Barber calls, the heap of actualities. And from this heap of actualities, some divine mathematician then actualizes some configuration. So, as you can see, in order to make sense of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, we've had to make a big abstract conceptual leap about how our picture of the world kind of hangs together. So we've got this abstract heap of actuality. So that's the external viewpoint, where we turn our possibilities into actualities. There's also an internal picture. We ourselves are part of these configurations. We have this experience of time. Our experience of time is purely a function of our memories and our brain state, and these also are part of our configuration. So what we've got is a whole bunch of experience encoded in our brain state in each particular configuration, and we're merely passive observers of a timeless universe, according to Barber. So to expand on this, there is a crucial element that needs to be introduced, and that element is the idea of a time capsule. So a time capsule is a static configuration of part or all the universe containing structures which suggest they are mutually consistent records of processes that took place in the past in accordance with certain laws. So around us, what we see is evidence that we have got here through a process of dynamical evolution, and all this evidence is consistent with all the other bits of evidence. So this is strong evidence that we got here through a dynamical process. Key to Barber's theory is that the Wheeler-DeWitt equation concentrates the probability distribution on these time capsules. I'm not going to discuss this today. This is something that really needs to be argued for, and Barber does have a few arguments. But this is the idea that we find ourselves highly probably in configurations that has the illusion that it has resulted from a dynamical process that got us to this point. So it's timeless. Time is not a framework in which the configurations of the world evolve. Time exists only so far as concrete configurations express it in their structure. So here's just a very simple rundown of Barber's theory. It's not all of his theory, it's just the salient temporal aspects that I want to concentrate on. Right, now, if we want to know how to assess Barber's claims of timelessness, we need to know what exactly is missing from these theories for us to call them timeless. Which element is missing that we would ordinarily call time? So what I want to do is just lean on Carlo Rovelli's analysis. He claims that there are many different notions of time in physics, and he lists up to 9. These notions are things like globality, one-dimensionality, externality. So if you think of general relativity, proper time in general relativity, proper time is certainly linear, it's certainly metric, but we know that it's not external or independent. It's determined internally in the theory. We also know that it's not asymmetric, it kind of runs the same in both directions. And so this is what Rovelli is talking about. He says, well, when we say time, we look at it and say, well, this is time, we mean many of these different things. Now, Rovelli goes on, his program is that when we increase the universality of our theories, we decrease the features of time that we've got. And his project is to show that when we get to the very top, we've actually got no attributes left. Right, so throughout this analysis, Rovelli comes to the conclusion that in general relativity, the two attributes that we've got left are linearity and metricity. So these are the ones that we're going to focus on here. We want to know, we want to ask the question, to what extent the linearity, as in one-dimensionality, we've got some tick that moves on in a linear fashion, and metricity, as in there is a meaningful measure of distance between our temporal instants, to what extent do we have these in the two theories, the two parts of Barber's theory that we've been looking at. So in the Machian formulation of general relativity, we have this Machian reconstruction of time. We start with relative configurations. These relative configurations, through best matching, define the dynamical supermetric. They define the distance between the configurations. Once we have the distance between the configurations, this determines where our geodesics run through our configuration space. We take these geodesics, and we connect together all the points of geodesics, these three geometries, into a four-dimensional space-time. So quite clearly, written in the essence of the theory is a reconstruction of canonical general relativity. So we have a sequence of three geometries that we're turning into our space-times. Once we get our space-time, we clearly have every notion of time that general relativity has, including a linearity to proper time and a metricity between our particular time instance. I mean, to go further, we actually get more than what we get in general relativity. So under those conditions where we find that the three geometries are globally hyperbolic hypersurfaces and that we end up with a Lorentzian metric, then we can say that the ephemeris time that we identified from our Jacobian theory is equivalent to proper time, but that's not necessarily the case. I mean, we can actually take three geometries and join them together in such a way that it doesn't give us something that corresponds to proper time in our general relativistic notion. What we end up with is, say, something where time points in a space-like direction, and it's merely whatever is perpendicular at each point to our space-like hypersurfaces. But the upshot is that we get this explicit emergence. It emerges straight out of our theory. Now, in canonical quantum gravity, we just don't have this particular reconstruction. We've got three-dimensional configurations, we've got a static quantum probability distribution, and the way that we recover time is not through some algorithm where we stick together three geometries. We recover time merely epistemically. We have the appearance of time that arises because we find ourselves in time captures. So there's no relation whatsoever between three geometries. There is nothing that is a linear structure that we can identify as time, nor anything that has temporal distance between three geometries. We just simply don't have that structure. So, for timeless Machian geometric dynamics, I say we need to be a little bit suspect about this claim of timelessness, but for timeless canonical quantum gravity, there's not much more that I can say other than it's a different type of timelessness, but it's not much firmer ground to be called timeless. Modulo a whole bunch of other philosophical problems that I'm sure you can all imagine beset the interpretation of canonical quantum gravity. So thanks very much for your attention.
There was some work done with alpha particle tracks in the 80s by a fellow by the name of Mott. I was in 29, was it? Okay, well, it was a while. So, look, I don't know the exact details of the analysis, but it's something along the lines of when we get localization of the wave function, we find that there's a higher probability that these alpha particle tracks localize at each step to a cloud chamber in a line that has the appearance that the particles move through some linear motion in one particular direction. And so, Barber leans on this. The Wheeler equation is going to play the same role as the Schrödinger equation in those cases. And so the solutions are going to localize or concentrate on configurations that, again, all along kind of streams through configuration space that look like they might have dynamic evolution. Something along those lines. I mean,